F1, number 2B.
Atoms were always, even Plato was already speaking about, was it Plato, yes, about atoms and so on. What's the use of them? Only when we have seen those things through science, it was practical, and it became practical. So it's no use inwardly to resist, to see being and our life and our being and about true manhood in its science. If we resist to see it in its science, we just resist that we live. Just we resist that we can live, because we won't live without science. It's the unknown and the ununderstandable. So let's see that only as we are willing to take on us that job of learning principle through its idea in its science and its scientific understanding, that only in that way principle is living and practical. Then we see that only through its system it is practical, let's see where this principle operates. You know, we say God is all in all. That's true. We say God is infinite. Well, that's certainly true. We say God fills all space. Well, that's true. I can't say no. But all that has not yet anything to do with the standpoint of principle when I speak about God as principle. Because if I say God is infinite and fills all space, I just have a huge limitation. I have, instead that I say God is only on a cloud, I say God is everywhere. Well, I just make the space of the cloud a bit bigger, that it fills a bit more space, but it's still spacious, I would say three-dimensional. Now, we still think in terms of three dimensions, and we like to have it as big as possible, but what is it? It's just a big pile, just a big mass. And usually, I would say, is that the right term in English? An amorphous mass. A mass which is not analyzed, which is not categorized, which is not classified, which is not systematized. It's just one big thing. But we can't use that. Well, to say God is all in all is certainly right, and is certainly necessary, and is certainly helpful. But that is all right. But when we come to the 4,000 period, we need to know something more about this infinite. And we must see that we leave that sense of God as infinite in a spatial way, in a three-dimensional way, and begin to see that if principle is infinite, it isn't really infinite in a three-dimensional way, because that would be a contradiction in itself. Three-dimension is limitation, and if we make those three-dimension very big, and always bigger, they are still three-dimension. But what we begin to see is that the realm in which principle operates, that infinite so-called space, or realm, let's say it realm, because then we take away the three-dimensional aspect of it. That infinite realm is the realm of understanding. It has no more anything to do with a spatial sense of it. Well, we have said that so often, naturally, that the realm of principle, where principle operates, is understanding. But I bet at the end of this week we love it more and see more what it really involves. See, so often we may say to a patient who comes along, say, something is wrong with his heart or so. Well, at the beginning we may say, well, you know, just know that God is everywhere, and right where you are is God, and right where your heart is God, and so on, and he's a bit more comforted and so on. That's all right, but naturally it's not true. God is not where a heart is, because God is not spatial. God is idea. Well, it's a nice symbol, and I certainly wouldn't like to dismiss it in my work, but as metaphysicians, you see, we have to see that we get away from this rather limited sense and see that the realm where God is understanding. Now, understanding isn't here nor there. Understanding has nothing to do with time nor space nor place. You can't say understanding is here or there. Understanding is an idea of principle, interpreting itself in the form and of understanding. It translates itself to us in the realm of understanding. And that has nothing to do with time, nor place, nor space, nor with our head, nor with our brain. So, we have seen that in this 4,000 year period, we will find that if principle is speaking to my Lord, that Lord is not a person, but it's understanding. It speaks to the realm of understanding. And in the measure as it speaks to understanding, science has a further great saving office, namely that alone science prevents us from misusing God. Only as we begin to understand principle through its categories, through its science, we begin to understand principle. And understanding principle means that we can't misunderstand principle. And misunderstanding principle means misusing principle. And all the evil there is which we can handle is misunderstanding. See, when we say we must handle evil in science, we have to be careful what we mean by it. Because some people laugh at us when we say we should handle evil. Somebody in America wanted to buy my little pamphlet. My pamphlet, How to Handle Evil, or something like that, in a shop in America. And the lady who sold it because she wanted to make a little business, not much business about it. But when that lady went out, she said, "After all, it's nonsense. You can't handle evil if there is no evil. How can you handle evil if there is no evil?" Yes, there is no evil. How can you handle evil if there is no evil? That same lady who sold that book, she teaches some sort of metaphysics, I don't know what. Why does she teach metaphysics if there is no misunderstanding? Well, she couldn't see, you see, she couldn't see that what she was doing in giving class on metaphysics was handling evil. The very thing which she said that doesn't exist. Because she thinks evil is, say, a poison in a fruit, or she thinks evil is, a microbe which gives a certain disease. Well, that's not what we understand under evil. Evil is not a poison. Evil is not the disease. Evil is fundamentally reduced to its noumenon. It is misunderstanding God. That's all there is about evil. Therefore, they can't understand why, when we say we must handle evil, that they can't understand why Mrs. Eddy says we must handle evil, because they understand, they think of evil in a very different language and in a very different term than we do. They think of evil as an entity. And then naturally, they are right when they say there is no evil, because Christian Science says too, there is no evil. Evil is no place, no person, nor this, nor that. What evil is a misunderstanding of the divine principle. And all the prophets are talking around this point. that the only evil there is to handle is the misunderstanding of God. That the only evil that there is to handle is that if we are not principally minded, the moment we reject to be principally minded, that's evil. The moment we reject that God is a principle, that's evil. The moment we reject that principle does not interpret itself through categories, that's evil. Because if you don't have categories, you can't handle evil, and you are a prey of evil. And so, let's see that the evil that if we speak during this week of handling evil, we really don't mean that there is such a thing as an entity called evil. That there is somehow an entity, I think that's the best word I can find, an entity which is evil. Doesn't exist. But evil is misunderstanding God, mistranslating God, misstating God, a misconception of God. That's evil. Now, we can see that, therefore, we can only really handle evil if we know, if we have that scientific understanding of God, and no other way around. That by a certain rule or by a certain argument, we cannot handle evil finally. That by an argument that a practitioner tells us, or somebody else tells us, or science of mind tells us, or unity tells us, says, well, just deny this and deny that. Well, you can deny it. Sometimes it has a very good effect on it. Why not? A belief has always an effect. And if you believe that the belief has a good effect, why shouldn't it have a good effect? But it isn't scientifically handling evil. It will never give us the position at the right hand of God's power. Will never give us an everlasting kingdom. Will always give us the ebb and flow. So the only way to handle it is through science and its scientific interpretation. And that's what the prophets want to show us in a wonderful way. And it just is going to debunk every false concept we have about God. Not a false concept about the disease or about the neighbor or about this or that. It's always evil. It's always a false concept of always God. Fundamentally. The noumenon. The plural of noumenon is noumenon. The singular is noumena. Noumena. I want to have the plural, yeah. Noumena. You see, we will see through the prophets that they don't have just the noumenon of evil saying it's a misstatement of God, but all the noumena, namely all the possible misrepresentation of the fundamentals of God. Well, we'll see that very, very nicely. So, this is again clear, you see, that only through accepting that principle has a system and categories, and only by understanding this principle in its categories, we can say, like David, I sit on the right side of the Lord and make my enemies a footstool. And then the prophecy is true, and we will establish an everlasting kingdom. Now, let's go further in the Bible and see what happened. Then, after that kingdom period, where David has seen that we are a king, and have a king within us, the Lord in us, that we have a king in us, then quite a big new question rises up, and that's the prophetic age. Namely, that prophetic age which says, yes, but how does that king come to birth in us? I have seen through the Bible, we would say, up to David, that we are kings and priests unto God. But I don't feel I am. I don't feel I am. I don't feel a bit I am a king. And yet the Bible says, I can be a king and I should be a king and I must be a king. Do I speak loud enough for the back rows? Yes? You tell me if I don't. Because sometimes I forget myself a little bit when I speak. So the question comes, well, if it is left to each one of us to be a king or not to be a king, then this God has no savior. God is only a saving power if it saves us from a false standpoint and from a false attitude, even if we don't like it, or even if we don't realize it, even if we are unconscious of it. It must have in itself a power that enforces, you see, that enforces that man understands God in its signs. And that's the whole prophetic age. The whole prophetic age is one big composition which shows how from Hosea down through all the minor prophets and the major prophets down to the point of Daniel, God is working out through 16 standpoints step by step. That principle says, I am going to establish in each one the understanding of principle. I am going to establish the Lord of everyone. So that with Daniel, he always could interpret everything just as God would interpret it. So Daniel, at the end of all the 16 prophets within the system, really manifests that Lord which sits on the right hand of the Lord and can interpret everything in the material universe, in the mental universe, and in the spiritual universe just as well as God would be able to do it. And then the prophetic age closes and Jesus comes and goes further. Says, now with that interpretation, with that ability to interpret, I can handle evil now just as I like, to the nth degree. And he did it. So let's see that we don't skip the prophetic age. Let's see that we don't try to jump from David right to Jesus and leave out the prophetic age, because the prophetic age helps us to see how this king is going to be awakened in us, is going to be born in us, like Micah will tell us, to be born in us, so that the king in us is going to reign over whole Babylon in the time of Darius and Cyrus. I think Cyrus and Darius and so on, see, reigns higher than the kings of the earth. Now, this prophetic age, you see, once shows therefore the system and the method through its standpoint, through its categories, how principal God is constantly working on us, on each one of us, constantly working on us to bring us into the school of principle, to be trained and drilled in the system of principle, to be recruited under the government and system of principle. That whole period is one big schooling and drilling of our understanding until our understanding is God's understanding. It works on us and our understanding in that way until it is the Lord in us that speaks. That's a wonderful message of the prophets. And in order to do that, the prophets saw, which we don't like to see, that we can only do that by getting rid of every misunderstanding of principle. And this getting rid of misunderstanding principle, that is symbolized in going into captivity. That going down into captivity was God's plan. Jeremiah told that they had to go down into captivity, that was in God's plan, that was not something bad, that was something very good, because the 4,000 period, the fourth stage of our spiritual evolution is that where we have to go down and see that Babylon is nothing. Before we can't see that evil is nothing, and therefore we can only see it if we handle it, if we go down to evil and look at it and talk to it and say, what are you? What is true about you? What is real about you? What is substance about you? And so on. Until we debunk evil to the point where it evaporates, where it, what is the Cheshire Cat? It has only the green left. And then even the green left. So in that way, you see, that's what the prophets do. They take that Cheshire cat and then first take away the leg and then the tail, you see. And each prophet takes something more away, you see. Until the last prophet only sees the green and then Daniel takes the green away and then finished, you see. That's how they handle evil, you see. They handle evil. They debunk a misconception step by step. Every fundamental misconception of God. The noumena of evil, step by step. Each one another one. And each one goes like drilling down somewhere. Each one drills a little bit further down, you see. Says, now we have got as far. Now comes another layer. Another argument which wants to stop us, which wants to try that we come to the final promised land. And then it drills down again, one more. But that drilling is a drilling into principle. To be drilled into a principled attitude, to be recruited unto principle, to be trained in the system of principle, and in the categories of principle, to be finally wedded, inwardly wedded, to 16 fundamental standpoints of the matrix. Of the matrix of the prophets. That's a special matrix. So, when they have seen that, when they tell us today and say, now look here, principle wants you to accept principle as a principle, therefore as a science, and you can't sidestep it. And in order to do that, you can only understand it if you see through all the misunderstandings of God, the misconception of God, the mistranslation of God. And to do that, you have to go down to Babylon, and you have to go down into captivity, to be in bonds with principle, so that you can unbound error. But the bonds must be now put on you. Paul said, I'm in the bonds of Christ. See? He could see that he was far away from the churches where they said, I can do what is right in my own eyes. I jolly well do. Oh, he said, no. I would like to do this and do that, he said, but I can't. I'm in bonds with Christ. And therefore I do that. And the prophets were those who said, all right, now I lead you into the bonds of principle. And those bonds of principle will show you in captivity that error is nothing. And you stay there until you see it. Then, when they begin to see it in captivity, then a completely new prophecy, strain of prophecy comes in. Then the strain of prophecy comes in, there is a highway out. Then comes the highway. Out of captivity, back into the promised land. We will see, or that's necessary to see, in each one of our life, that the highway of our life will be never a highway until we are first willing to be in bonds to principle. If we are not willing to be first in the bonds of principle, life cannot be a highway. After principle comes life, but there is no life without principle beforehand. So somehow we will be in bonds this next week. Just in bonds to see, well, if we want to gain our everlasting identity, which is lasting everlastingly, we jolly well first have to accept that principle has a science and has categories and are willing to see through the misconception of God. Doing that, then the highway opens. Then Zechariah and all these prophets come and say there will be an eternal highway. Then, only then, no obstruction is anymore enough. There is no evil somewhere. All the evil there is somewhere in us. And that evil in us is not just a bad habit or anything. It's fundamentally, when we go from phenomena to noumena, we come to misunderstandings of God. And those we have to handle, and it's a wonderful thing to handle them and to look through them. Well, that leads us to the end, you see, of the prophetic age. And then we know how Jesus came and took the inheritance of the prophets and said, all right, now with this I can show you the way. I am the way. So I have pinpointed now our task, which is the prophetic age, which is that specific job which we will have spiritually to do, to see the sister principle has a system and can only be understood through its system, and that we should be willing to accept principle as a principle and not just as a term.